Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Before we begin the official part of the proceedings, we've got two things to cover. First, I want to introduce some of our state legislators that represent this area. And then we will also introduce a young person who we normally invite in every Wednesday to speak to City Council. But really, this first part is about the opportunity to say thank you to our state legislators. Our delegation, I think, has just done a superb job in Salem this last year. And the Portland City Council wanted to take the time to say thank you and to recognize the individual members who are here this morning. So I'd like to start with Speaker Merkley. His leadership has really helped secure historic funding for education. And although the document recording fee increase wasn't successful, your leadership on the issue kept it at the forefront. And as Speaker, you presided over an incredibly efficient session that moved critical issues forward, and you were still able to end the session on time. Thank you. Representative Bonamici, for an outstanding first session in the House representing your constituents in Beaverton and Portland. Your advocacy for schools and for consumer protection was particularly appreciated. Thank you. Representative Greenlick, you are one of a small few number of people who truly understood the complexities of the Oregon healthcare system. We want to thank you for championing the passage of the Healthy Oregon Act. Thank you so much, Mitch. And Representative McPherson, for your hard work and balanced approach in addressing some of the shortcomings in ballot measure 37 that will be going to the voters this year in November, and we certainly appreciate your efforts. That's going to make a huge difference in land use throughout the state and in the city of Portland. Thank you. And Representative Nolan, for your work on ensuring that all students in our school system have the basic resources they need for quality education. While there's more work to be done, your historic leadership during the Ways and Means process make the difference in many of our children's lives. And your support and leadership for streetcar funding and the underground injection system authorization and the Milwaukee light rail funding is much appreciated. And as you could tell by the traffic this morning, much needed. Thank you. Representative Chip Shields, thank you for your work on the streetcar funding, for helping provide minority and women access to public contracting opportunities, and for being a champion for affordable housing. Thank you, Chip. Senator Avakian, for an outstanding first session in the Senate and as chair of the Senate Environment Committee, your leadership on sustainability, renewable energy, and climate change makes Oregon a national leader on these issues. Your city appreciates your accessibility and open door down in Salem this session. Thank you. And Senator Brown, thank you for your 16 years of service to the city and the state. Thank you especially for securing long-deserved protections and rights for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered Oregonians. We also appreciate your work on securing funding for the Milwaukee Light Rail. Your leadership and your presence in the Senate will be missed by all of us. Thank you. Senator Jenny Burdick. Jenny, thank you for your work on the use of deadly force and the continued work on behalf of pedestrian and bicycle safety. It's greatly appreciated. Thank you, Jenny. Former Senator Ryan Deckard, thank you for your work on affordable housing, education funding, and economic development. Thank you for your 10 years of service to the state of Oregon and to the citizens. And you can bet that you will still be hearing from us even in your new role. Thank you, Ryan. And finally, Senator Rod Monroe. Not the last, but not the least. Thank you. for your hard work and your advocacy on the Milwaukee Light Rail package. We also appreciate your leadership in introducing the city's design review bill. So thank you, Rod, for all the hard work you do for our citizens. Commissioners, would you like to add any comments?
Well, I just want to say it was just so refreshing to be able to go down as a member of the City Council and be able to see Senator Avakian, Senator Monroe, Representative Shields, Senator Burdick in positions, and particularly Speaker Merkley in positions of authority. It was not an atmosphere I was necessarily accustomed to. And to be treated with the courtesies and the actual ability to actually move legislation, I mean, meant a lot to all of us, but I think it meant really especially a lot to me, having come from the legislature and really appreciating all that you were able to do and did do. It made us really proud here in Portland. And we talked about it weekly, about just how amazing it was to see the great things you all did. So it's really something that all of us hope happens again and again and again in future sessions. Thank you all.
You all had really hard choices to make and difficult decisions, and I could add to the list for each one of you that the mayor summarized for each one of you, but I just want you to know how what a difference you've made to the lives of Portlanders, to tens of thousands of Portlanders. And it wasn't just about policy. It wasn't just about changing government or even making decisions about right or wrong. You took affirmative steps, and like hasn't been done in a generation, and in the process, you've made life better for our citizens and allowed us to do a better job for our people, and just a really heartfelt thanks.
I would simply commend you for the compassion you've shown for vulnerable populations in our state. I think each one of you has taken significant actions, both individually, but also, more importantly, collectively as a legislative body. There's been some very important legislation that's made it through and that affects foster kids, affects seniors, and that's very important. Those issues are very important to me personally, but they're certainly important to all people in our state. So most important, I think, is it's, I feel proud about our legislature again. And it's been a rough few sessions in the past where it was impossible to make that same statement I just made. So I think you've restored a lot of confidence that you can get things done. And as I said, you've made me proud again. Thank you.
Somebody who's been in Oregon my whole life and an optimist, it was getting tough there up until this last session because I really do think under some not as strong leadership as all of you have shown this last session, we were starting to slip. I was talking with somebody this morning in the legislative breakfast about, when Governor Schwarzenegger's out ahead of you on global warming, I think Senator Vaki and I were talking about this, it's time to step up. And then I think that many of the things that make our state the best state in the country have been at risk. And sitting with Speaker Merkley and being able to think through things, not always agree, take good positions and move things forward, I have a lot of hope again, and I want to thank you for that. I think it's a lot, you get a lot more thanks serving on the Portland City Council than you do in the legislature, and I know that all of you work very, very hard and don't always do it, so you're welcome to stay for the impeachment discussion this morning. You'll see this. as some of the Portland citizens work up a lather to see what to maybe change the president, I hope you'll take a few minutes and introduce yourself to the very strong and progressive and good elected officials that we have here this morning who I think set an entirely different standard. So thank you so much.
And I wanted to also thank two of our senators who weren't able to be here, Senator Gordley and Senator Johnson, and I want to thank both of them. Senator Gordley worked very hard on issues around mental health, public safety, Senator Johnson was very key in terms of economic development and transportation issues. So I want to say thanks to those folks, even though they're not able to be here.
Mayor, certainly Senator Carter as well.
And Senator Carter,
helped a ton.
So thank you all. And we're going to proceed with our council hearing. I know you folks are awfully busy. You're more than welcome to leave, or you can stay and see how local government works.
It's messy.
Hi. Thanks.
Thanks, folks. In the second part to the proceedings before we actually begin officially is that each week we invite young people in to talk to us about issues that are important to them. I always ask the question to this group and also to our audience at home. The question is, how are the children? We know that when our children are cared for, our community is a better place. And so by listening to the wisdom of these young people, we can learn from them and we can incorporate what they say into our daily actions and activities. And I'm very pleased today to have a young woman named Arme Johnson and her instructor, Roy Pittman. We all know Roy, and Arme is a new face, but could you folks come up, please? They belong to a program that Roy started many years ago with Faye Palmerton called TLC TNT. And Roy has run at Peninsula Park, the wrestling program, for many years and has turned out international, national, and state champions in wrestling. But the most important thing he teaches these young people are how to be good human beings. He just uses wrestling as the tool to do that. So, Roy, thank you for your years of work to our community and to all the young people you've helped.
Thank you. My name is Roy Pittman, one of the co-coordinators of the TLC TNT program. We work with young at-risk youth. We also work with, we have a component, a college component, for young adults. And Arme is one of the counselors who has gone on to college that we still work with, that we still mentor her, and she's three semesters away from graduating. And let me say, they volunteer more than what they get paid for. And we'd like to hear from Arme, and thanks for calling me one of these young people. So that really feels good. So, Arme?
Well, as Roy has mentioned, thank you for inviting me today. It's a privilege to be here in front of you. Before it's stated, my name is Arme Johnson. I'm a student at Concordia University. I'm a junior, three more semesters left, which I'm very excited. Right now, I'm a residence assistant. Last year, I was chaplain as well as a part of different clubs on campus. I think one of the main things, when I thought about TLC TNT, I was a counselor there for 5 years, and they have you begin not getting paid, but just starting and just working as a counselor under the rest of the counselors. And it was a great experience for me all 5 years that I was there. I believe that effective leader, one of the main key components of an effective leader is servanthood. And Mayor Tom Potter, you would know that by serving the community for over 38 years here, as well as commissioners, this is what you do, is service. I think that is key for the life of people. This summer, I was in D.C., and I worked for the Children's Defense Fund under the direction of Marion Wright Edelman. And that taught me a lot. It opened up, I would say, my worldview, how I look at things, has completely changed. It's a child advocacy program. I worked under the Freedom School Division, and those are schools that are pretty much literacy rich, and they focus on reading and building literacy within the African American community, as well as minorities just in general. I also, while I was at TLC TNT, Ms. Palmerton, as well as Mr. Pittman, once you leave the program, they partner you up with mentors from the Seroptimus Club. And my mentor is Mim Osborne. and truly she thinks that she doesn't do much at all, but she does. For me, support and encouragement is what I need through college. I think that's the most that you need, besides finances, of course. You need support and encouragement, and that is what she gives to me, as well as the Soroptimist Club. They also pay for my books every semester, which, you know, can be very pricey this day and age. But I would say that, to conclude, I would say that TLC TNT is one of the best programs that any young person could be involved in, because it teaches you how to serve. And if you do not know how to serve, you can definitely not be a leader. You cannot be great without having a servanthood mentality. So therefore, I believe that TLC TNT is equipping leaders to serve this community, not only in Portland, but outside of the state of Oregon, across the world, and even, you know, overseas as well. They have made a positive impact on my life as well as others, and I think that it should be noted here today. The focus is children. That's what we deal with 24/7, all the time. I'm a youth leader as well, so I'm around children all the time, and they definitely are our future, and I think it's important to seed into them by these programs here in Portland. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Excellent. And you know, in politics, we need servant leaders, too.
Yes.
And I would hope that someday maybe you think about that, Armaine.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Roy, for your service, Armaine.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Sten.
Here.
Potter.
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity he or she is authorized to represent. Please read the first communication.
Agenda item 1161, request of Harriet Sheridan to address Council regarding impeachment. She had called and said she was not going to be able to make it.
Please call the next.
1162, request of Virginia L. Ross to address Council regarding impeachment proceedings against G.W. Bush and R. Cheney.
Thank you for being here this morning. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Yes, sir. My name is Virginia Ross, and I'm a Portland native, a former first lieutenant in the Oregon National Guard, lawyer, and a patriot. It is the duty of every citizen to stand and defend our Constitution, and our Constitution is now under attack. This resolution before you outlines several clear impeachable offenses by this never-elected regime: warrantless spying on Americans, condoning and ordering torture, violating habeas corpus, and lying to Congress. These provide more than ample basis for impeachment, and they have done so for years. But this resolution could and should include an even more serious charge. It should state a criminal indictment against Vice President Richard B. Cheney for misprison of treason against our United States of America in connection with the attacks of September 11, 2001. Title 18, Part 1, Chapter 115, Section 2382 of the U.S. Code holds in part that whoever owing allegiance to the United States and having knowledge of the commission of any treason against them conceals and does not, as soon as may be, disclose and make known the same to the President or to some judge of the United States or to the governor or to some judge or justice of a particular state, is guilty of misprison of treason and shall be fined under this title or imprisoned or both. In an argument over 600 pages and 1,000 footnotes, this book, Crossing the Rubicon by Michael Rupert, makes a fully documented and compelling case stating the means, motive, and opportunity to commit misprison of treason at the highest levels of the U.S. government concerning the attacks of 9/11/2001. Vice President Dick Cheney is named as the prime suspect for this crime. If we are a nation of laws, we must, as citizens, and you as commissioners, I believe, and as mayor, must join in this resolution and demand impeachment and indictment and trial of Vice President Cheney for criminal offenses against this country. I am here today in the hope that we are still a nation of laws, and I implore you to pass this resolution at the very least to demonstrate that at least here in Portland, we still respect the Constitution and our nation of laws. I will quickly state the case made within this book that demonstrates the Vice President's criminal conduct. The reason this case is vitally important for you to hear is that this evidence relates to his command authority over all military and civil terrorism training. Portland will be the target within the next 2 weeks of the largest terrorism drills ever held, Top Off 4 and Vigilant Shield 8. Just as during the 9/11 attacks, Vice President Cheney still has command and control oversight over these upcoming drills. If we are a nation of laws, Vice President Cheney's role in the attacks of 9/11 should become the subject of a criminal investigation. I will tell you quickly about some of the things in this book, but also I ask you to review the extensive collection of books and articles and videos at OregonTruthAlliance.org that will substantiate all of the following statements. President Cheney had the means, motive, and opportunity to commit misprision of treason on 9/11/2001. He had the motive to engineer and foster a new Pearl Harbor, as called for in the Project for the New American Century report, Rebuilding American Defenses, which was signed by him and numerous other leading neocons serving in the Bush administration. His means, evidence shows that on 9/11/2001, Vice President Cheney was running a completely separate chain of command and control via the Secret Service. His separate chain of command led to a paralysis of our Air Force response on 9/11. The Secret Service has the technology to use the same radar screens the FAA sees in real time. They also have legal authority and technological capability to take supreme command. I'll skip ahead. There's the motive, peak oil. But the key issue I hope you'll examine is opportunity. Vice President Cheney had more than any other U.S. government official had opportunity to commit this crime of complicity in the attacks of 9/11. He was in charge.
Ma'am, you're going to have to write it down.
Sorry. There's a whole array of military exercises, Northern Vigilance, Global Guardian, and they simulated a live-fly hijacking and a plane-into-building attack on 9/11. They set up Tripod 2, which set up a command and control center. Vice President Cheney had charge over this command and control center before the hijackings occurred. I would just urge you to please look into this. This is a very serious matter, and I know it's not been given enough time here. But these exercises are coming up, and we feel that this is a very serious question, and they should be looked into.
Thank you. Can I ask folks to keep their comments to 3 minutes? Please call the next.
Item 1163, request of Grant E. Remington to address council regarding a resolution to impeach Bush and Cheney.
Thank you for being here.
Please. Thank you, Mayor.
State your name when you speak, and you have 3 minutes, sir.
Yes. My name is Grant Remington. I'm President Emeritus of Veterans for Peace, Chapter 72. I'm an Army veteran, served in Vietnam, 68-69. And before I get to my printed remarks, I would like to thank you for asking, how are the children, instead of, is our children learning? And and segueing into that, I would also like to congratulate a friend of mine for many, many years, Carol Smith, who was just hired as the Portland Public Schools superintendent. You go, girl. She'll do a good job. And to quote Sheriff Bart from Blazing Saddles, excuse me while I whip this out. I always carry this with me. And if you guys don't have one, I have copies here if you'd like one. I'm here in support of the resolution to impeach, and my prepared statement is as follows. Duty, honor, and country. These three simple words make up the model of the United States Army's Military Academy, West Point. They're placed in order of importance. In reverse order, we can start with country. Patriotism and selfless service to that country, and appreciation of the freedoms we enjoy, although many of them, were hard fought to obtain, and the wish to pass these on to future generations could describe country. Honor is more elusive in that one must have a value system to rely upon in order to find your definition of honor. Honor is a code of trust, of speaking truthfully, of not tolerating the lying, cheating, or stealing that sometimes crops up in public and private enterprises. It might be as simple as noticing the cashier gave you a 20 instead of a 10 and correcting that error. It might be speaking up when you hear a racist remark. If you have a system of values, honor is just being true to them. But duty is where rubber meets the road. Obligation, responsibility. We have a duty to do the right thing no matter how inconvenient, difficult, or dangerous. Duty before self. This is why I'm here today, because I have a duty. A duty that was placed upon me when 40 years ago today, well, 40 years ago, I raised my right hand and swore that I would support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and that it will bear true faith and allegiance to the same. And I don't believe that oath was negated when I was discharged. You all know what Article 6, Clause 2 says about international treaties. They are the supreme law of the land. That means the Geneva Conventions, the Conventions Against Torture, Nuremberg, The Hague, and many more numerous to list, and this administration has violated any number of these. You can go to our national website, veteransforpeace.org, and see the list. It's quite extensive. As members of the City Council, you also took an oath that included protecting the Constitution, or words to that effect. I urge you to revisit that oath, to examine what that oath means to you, and put it in the context of duty, honor, and country. This administration has broken the law and must be held accountable. Please do your duty and honor this country by supporting the resolution. Thank you very much.
Please call the next.
Agenda item 1164, request of Paul Verhoeven to address council regarding Portland Saturday Market relocation to Waterfront Park.
Good morning. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Paul Verhoeven, Executive Director of Portland Saturday Market, 108 West Burnside. I want to thank you, Mayor, and fellow commissioners for allowing me this opportunity to come before you today. In the last week, more than 2,500 postcards from members and supporters of Saturday Market have been sent to the mayor's office, asking the mayor and commissioners for your continued support for the 351 individual businesses and family businesses that comprise the Saturday Market. Over the past 33 years, Portland Saturday Market has grown from a handful of determined artists into an internationally recognized institution. With combined annual sales of over $10 million, it is often easy to overlook the fragile nature of Saturday Market. Like many arts-related businesses, individual members are often severely undercapitalized and operate on very thin margins. Minor interruptions can be painful, and severe or repeated disruption could be fatal. Therefore, it is critical to the successful relocation of the market that our transition to our new permanent home in Waterfront Park be handled in a manner that presents as little disruption as possible to the ongoing market operations. In order to assure that this will happen, we are asking for the support of each of you and the city bureaus that you oversee. When we first started the planning for the revival of the Old Town neighborhood around the Skidmore Fountain, it was presumed that the new location for Saturday Market would be secured before our existing site was redeveloped. Now, due to the length of the planning process and the complexity of the project, we find that the work in Waterfront Park necessary to relocate Saturday Market will not be completed until March of 2009. With the completion of the work for the University of Oregon and the White Stag Building, and Mercy Corps ready to break ground on their new project in the Skidmore Fountain Building and adjacent lots next spring, we have struggled to find an interim site for 2008 that will keep Saturday Market whole. After careful consideration of alternative sites, we have determined that the best option is to remain on as much of our existing site as possible, underneath the Burnside Bridge and in Ankeny Plaza, and to ask for the use of two lanes of NATO Parkway to connect the pieces together. This option appears to offer the least disruption for continued operations in 2008 and will present a smoother transition to Waterfront Park in 2009. In order to make this happen, we need your support and the assistance of the city bureaus that you're responsible for. Particularly important will be the continued partnership with PDC and Parks and Recreation. We have been working closely with Commissioner Saltzman and his staff, and we appreciate the fact that bureau directors have been meeting regularly to coordinate efforts. As we move forward, I'd like to specifically ask for the assistance of PDOT in helping to resolve the issue of multiple users of NATO Parkway and the Bureau of Developmental Services to ensure that the complicated permitting process necessary in Waterfront Park, which is both in a greenway within a historic district and part of the downtown, does not delay the completion of work in Waterfront Park by March of 2009. I'm confident that by working together, we can make this happen and look forward to a prosperous future for Saturday Market and the Old Town neighborhood. Again, I thank you for your time and allowing me to speak this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to say I hope that the other commissioners have had a chance to see the postcards that had been coming in. We had hoped that they would arrive here to the city clerk and be presented to all of you, but the way they were addressed, they ended up in the mayor's office. So I encourage all of you to take a look at them if you can. I believe they've received over 2,200 so far, and they not just have the printed matter that's on the copy I gave you, but they have individual comments from many of our members and supporters. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll be glad to share those with the commissioners.
Thank you, Mayor.
...1165, request of Harlan Hiltner to address council regarding privatization of parking spaces and developers and the infrastructure.
Could you repeat the name?
Harlan Hiltner.
Okay. So communications to the consent agenda. Do any commissioners wish to pull any item from the consent agenda?
So I just wondered. Virginia Ross, did we call her name?
She spoke.
She did speak.
Yeah.
Okay.
Make sure I have. Yeah.
Did you have one?
I have 1177. I need to
pull 1177.
Mr. Mayor, I need to move item number 1177 to 2:45 time certain on October 25th.
Has that been scheduled, you know?
I think that was, Commissioner.
I think it's been scheduled.
It was 1195.
No, this is the Safer Routes to School.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Sorry, Jess. Should have been on this. That was, sorry, 1193 was the one they wanted to move to the 2:45 time certain.
I have the Safer Routes to Schools, 1177. Let me see what 1193 is.
Unless I wanted to move both of them?
Oh, it's both of them.
The both of them?
Yep.
Okay.
Sorry for the confusion.
So pull 1177 out of consent and continue it, to 2:45 on October.
And 1193.
And 1177.
October 25th at 2:45 time certain.
Please. Thank you.
Just one.
Does any person in this room wish to pull any other item from the consent agenda? Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read the 9:30 time, sir.
Item 1166, authorize intergovernmental agreement with the USDA Forest Service, Mount Hood National Forest, for protection and stewardship of the Bull Run Watershed Management Unit.
Mr. Leonard.
Thank you. We have Eddie Campbell from the Portland Water Bureau and Gary Larson from the U.S. Forest Service joining us. As two of my colleagues know, this is a process that we are reaching the end of that began back in August of 2000. So for fully 7 years, we have been negotiating with the U.S. Forest Service on redefining the roles of the Portland Water Bureau and the U.S. Forest Service in the Bull Run Watershed. And as most people know, the Bull Run Watershed is the primary drinking source for roughly 20% of the state's population, including all of the folks that live in Portland and mostly surrounding communities. Because of the current agreement, which I believe was signed originally in 1979, the relationship has evolved and changed because mostly of budget cuts that the federal government has had to endure. And as a result, we've redefined basically how we're going to interact in the watershed, a place that is prohibited to have anybody but Forest Service employees or Water Bureau employees within it to preserve our drinking water. We are really fortunate to have Gary Larson be the person that we are dealing with at this point because he truly exemplifies partnership, particularly at the federal government, has worked with us really diligently to get this product, but also is working very closely with myself and David Bragdon to extend the Springwater Corridor Trail all the way out, not only just to Bull Run Park. So at some point, some people will be able to ride a bike from Portland to Bull Run Park and picnic there, but also all the way up into Mount Hood. And he has just been a great person to work with. I'm really pleased to introduce him and Eddie today to talk about the elements of this agreement. And again, thank you, Gary, for all your help. You've been just a great partner. Thanks.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. Edward Campbell, Portland Water Bureau. I'm the Resource Protection and Planning Director. So as Commissioner Leonard laid out for us, the purpose of this agreement is to define and help the two agencies in their joint management role for the Bull Run Management Unit. And the major factors that have changed over the last decade have been that as of 1977, the city and the Forest Service were actually charged by Congress at that point to be joint managers of the Bull Run Watershed Management Unit. And that was followed by legislation that ended all logging on federal lands in the management unit going forward. And so as that occurred over 1996 and 2001, what we found ourselves was in a situation where we had a different management focus in our joint role with the Forest Service. And that management focus was aligned in a way that it had never been in the past. So the need for this, as I said, came about from those changes in federal legislation and alignment of our missions. And then as Commissioner Leonard mentioned, there's also been a decline in the amount of funding that the federal government has been able to devote to the maintenance of facilities within the management unit. And so the city has been stepping up and taking a more substantive role in its co-management role in the management unit. So the agreement, it describes the activities that we believe the agencies need to work on, but I think more importantly, it spells out how the agencies are actually going to work together. The agreement is a framework. And so essentially what that means is that no matter what it is that the agencies find themselves working on in relation to the Bull Run, we know we're going to do it in a certain manner. And I would say that the basic principles that govern how we're going to work together is that we're going to identify the lead agency or joint agency responsibilities and authorities for all things that we deal in. And we're going to declare those and be clear about them. We're going to devise efficient regulatory and consultative processes so that we're not basically getting in each other's hair for things that we don't need to, but that we're going to provide proper oversight of the activities that we both jointly need to work on. And then the third piece of this is that we're going to communicate with each other and the public on a regular basis to make sure that we receive feedback and to help coordinate our activities appropriately with the community. So some key items that we envision working on in this manner include security and access management, emergency planning and response, fire planning, prevention, detection, and suppression, protection of natural resources within the unit, and this includes both the aquatic resources and the terrestrial resources that are in our watershed and in our management unit, and then conservation education, which is a topic of great interest both to the Forest Service and to Commissioner Leonard, and as he referred to, he continues to work on mechanisms that will increase our public's awareness and understanding of the importance of our management unit and our watershed.
So we believe many of these activities will require separate plans to guide how we work on them. And in those cases, we propose to develop functional plans that will actually spell out and ensure clarity and a mutual understanding of what we mean and what each of our responsibilities and authorities will be relative to these issues. The two most significant items that the agencies plan to work on are a coordinated approach to the road network within the management unit, and then also a potential land exchange that would create a more rational land ownership pattern for both parties. And in just a moment, I'm going to show a couple slides to illustrate what we're talking about relative to those two issues. I just want to take a moment and talk a little bit about the process. As Commissioner Leonard referred to, this has been a long road to get here, finally, and it has traversed three different commissioners, actually, from the council. And so there is a history here that began when Dr. Ralph Crawshaw, a very committed stakeholder and a very committed advocate for the Bull Run, challenged both of the agencies in the year 2000 to start to work together to reflect the new policy landscape that the legislation that I mentioned earlier had created. And it was as a result of that challenge that both agencies actually got together and focused on trying to change the nature of the relationship. And I think since that time, we've actually had two separate comment and response processes for the document. And as a result of this long process, I would say that we actually have put a lot of what we're embodying into the agreement into practice. The actual activities of working on this process have improved our working relationships. And I'm very happy to say that I think the working relationship between the city and the Forest Service at this time is the best that it's probably ever been in the history of the two agencies. I want to just reflect some of the key changes to the document that we've made based on public comment. One of the things we heard early on is that the document, our original version of it, was rather long, and some people felt it was included too much. And so what we did is we split the document actually into two separate documents, and Commissioner Leonard has ensured that all of you have received the second piece of this. And so we took the background and history associated with the agreement and separated that into a report to the community. And so you have that before you, and folks that are interested here in council chambers can get a copy of that as well. We reduced the term of the agreement from what we had originally proposed as 30 years to 20 years, again, based on comments from the public. And we increased the public involvement of our city Forest Service work group meetings. That was a strong comment that we received, and so we, in negotiating with the Forest Service, came to a very good compromise and opened up those meetings for public participation and review. Finally, based on concerns that came up in our process relative to the proposed land exchange, we had also proposed to bring forward a city ordinance that would enact the same timber cutting restrictions that apply to federal lands to city-owned lands. And as a result of stakeholder feedback that we received prior to bringing that forward, concerns that they wanted to work through, we pulled that ordinance, and we are committed to working with our stakeholders to address their concerns, and we will bring that forward once we've gone through that process. So we had originally submitted that, but we're going to continue to work on that and plan to bring that back. So with that, Carla, I think I'd like to just show a couple slides briefly. So the first slide I'm showing here is the Bull Run Watershed Management Unit. The dotted line within the greater gray line there is our water supply drainage. And the red lines that you see on this map are what we call the legacy road network in the management unit. You'll see on the left are two drinking water reservoirs, Reservoir 2 on the left, Reservoir 1 in the middle portion of your screen. And then on the far right of your screen, you'll see Bull Run Lake. This road network at its full build-out was about 373 miles. And what we've done working with the Forest Service has identified that we need far fewer roads than are currently, or were, I should say, in the management unit. And so this next slide shows you the legacy road network that we plan to have in place once the Forest Service actually finishes a road decommissioning program that it has been involved in. At this time, we're down to 238 active road miles in the management unit. And our goal, once we get to what's represented on this map, will be a road network of approximately 168 miles. And we, in the city's responsibility, ultimately will be to maintain the remaining road network once the decommissioning program has finished and once we actually change the city's ownership role in relation to the road network. And so we're working on that as a part of this agreement, and ultimately the city will take care of maintaining the necessary road network for our water facilities, and the Forest Service will complete the decommissioning that needs to occur. On a bit of good news recently is that the Forest Service has actually secured funding next year to remove about 5 more miles of road network that are necessary necessary to be decommissioned within the water supply drainage. So that'll take our number down. We have about 20 miles remaining of decommissioning, and that'll take it down another chunk. This next slide is to illustrate what we're talking about in terms of the proposed land exchange. The blue colors on the screen represent city ownership of lands within the Bull Run Watershed Management Unit, and the green lands are Forest Service federal-owned lands. As you can see, the city owns certain lands that are scattered far away from the actual reservoirs that are most important to our water supply operations. And so what we have discussed is the possibility of actually swapping out equal amounts of land with the Forest Service to obtain lands that would give us a land ownership pattern around our reservoirs. So that's indicated here, the lands that we're talking about that are under consideration. And then if we go through with it, we would have a land ownership pattern that would look something like this, with the city's land holdings consolidated around the reservoirs and its water facilities, and then the Forest Service land for the uplands. What we hope to achieve with this is basically to allow each of the agencies to focus on its principal management role, the city's in providing safe drinking water, and then the Forest Service in terms of its stewardship a role in maintaining the ecosystem health in the management unit. So that concludes my comments. I'm going to turn it over now to Gary for just a few more words from the federal perspective.
So thank you. It's a privilege and honor to be here before you today. I've had the unique privilege of working with three commissioners on Bull Run issues, and I thank you so much, Commissioner Leonard, for your kind words, and I just very much appreciate and value our strong working relationship. It is highly unusual for any agency, whether federal or state, to co-manage lands. Often we collaborate with partners, often we cooperate, but it is a very rare circumstance when we actually co-manage lands, when we have joint responsibility. The implications of that are subtle. For example, our public involvement processes are very different. They both strive in the end for the same thing, but they're very different. At the state and local level, here at the city, you have sunshine laws. Federal officials, what they do, what they're required to do by law is to keep discussions with citizens at arm's length to make sure we don't have ex parte communication prior to making decisions and stuff like that. So it's been kind of a unique challenge bringing together the federal, disparate federal and city interests. But I have to tell you that I think that we've done it. It doesn't bother me that we've taken as long as we have. Anything worth doing anything that's important and worth doing well, it sometimes takes time. We've put a lot of time into this. From my perspective, it's a very highly polished document, and I would urge you to pass the resolution. I want to spend just a minute and show one PowerPoint slide, if I may. And this slide shows the framework for co-management of the Bull Run Watershed Management Unit. Can you turn that just a little bit so I can see it? Thank you. So first, one of the things that's unique is that there are a suite of federal laws and policy. First is the Safe Drinking Water Act. Second is the Bull Run Management Act that you're all familiar with, PL 95-200. Third is the Endangered Species Act. Fourth is federal policy of the Northwest Forest Plan, guiding management of Forest Service lands in Oregon and Washington. Next is our Mount Hood Land and Resource Management Plan, the National Environmental Policy Act, and then the last one I've listed is the Federal Powers Act. But what you need to know is that there's actually, I have a two-volume reference on my desk that's the principal laws guiding the Forest Service, and it is a suite of laws. So it's against that backdrop that we're managing the land. Then the agreement that's the subject of this resolution, we prepared a draft agreement. We did a Federal Register notice, put it on websites, newspaper notice, news releases, and a series of public workshops. So that culminated in public review and comments, which led to the final agreement. And then the city council resolution, and if we have the resolution passes, I will then take it forward to my boss, the regional forester, for her concurrence. Then from that, we have a series of multi-year functional plans, and I'll just name them quickly, not go in any detail. First is the Access Management Security Plan. Next is the Emergency Response Coordination Protocol, and we've had several opportunities to use that protocol, and it's worked well. The Road Decommissioning Plan, Transportation System Management Plan, and Fire Protection Plan. We will be publishing periodic reports as part of our public accountability, annual programs of work, a five-year agreement review and update, annual report to the community, and an annual public meeting. From this agreement will stem a new special use permit and conveyance of rights for all of the activities that currently happen in the watershed, and I believe that there are probably 17 separate agreements that you all have, and our idea is just streamlining those into one or two. That will lead to use and occupancy of national forest lands, and then the agreement contemplates considering a land exchange. That also will have NEPA public review and comments, and then that'll also govern use and occupancy of water bureau lands. So taken together, the point is that it's a pretty comprehensive framework. Not only do you have the city resolutions and policies, you also have a federal framework that this takes place on. And that concludes my PowerPoint. Thank you. The last thing I'd like to do in closing is to read a couple of highlights of a document that our staff in the Forest Service and in the Water Bureau worked together on 7 years ago, and it was at the beginning of the process, and what we did was state our joint interests, and I thought in closing that might be an interesting thing for you all to hear. This is what started the process in response to Dr. Ralph Crashaw 7 years ago. I do want to take just a moment, and it's unfortunate that he can't be here, but he played a really catalytic role in urging us to get together and find our common ground and figure out how to work together peacefully. And it was really at his urging. He was sometimes impatient with the length of time it took, but he was also continued to be patient with us and help guide the process. So our joint interests first are to protect and conserve the natural resources, ecosystem processes, and other assets of the Bull Run. Second interest was to champion, represent, and redeem the public's interest in securing benefits from the use and management of the Bull Run watershed. Our third joint interest was to work together to improve governance and help people redeem their responsibilities, both for stewardship and citizenship. Our fourth interest was to collaborate with each other and interested parties to make our greater community a better place and to move towards social, economic, and environmental sustainability. Our fifth interest was to forge a new partnership and foster internal and external healing to enable the Water Bureau, Forest Service, and other stakeholders to engage in responsible and well-informed dialogue, policy formulation, planning, and decision-making. Then we both had a desire to improve our working relationships with each other, And then lastly, we had a joint interest in managing both the natural resources and the water utility in a business-like, cost-effective, and efficient manner that returns high value for public investments. From my perspective and in my judgment, the agreement that's before you responds very positively to all those interests, and I want to thank each of you for the particular role that you've helped making it so, particularly Commissioner Leonard. Thank you.
Thank you. And, you know, I just have to say that if each of our federal officers perform their duties in the way you've demonstrated to me, you perform yours in representing the best interests of the public and true public service, why half of this crowd wouldn't be here today watching. So I really am just, as a person who's been in government a long time, deeply impressed with your service and your commitment and follow through on your word and everything that you have demonstrated to three of us up here over the last number of years. It's been really outstanding. We greatly appreciate it.
We're not taking a vote. Just wait a second.
Moves to a second reading.
Yeah. Can I make a quick comment then?
Sure.
Well, I just want to join Commissioner Leonard and thank you both, the Water Bureau, and particularly Gary for his work. I think some of my fondest memories of serving on the council were driving around the Bull Run with Gary Larson, who, if you have not had the chance to do that, should do it. Is not only exemplary federal servant, but also a philosopher. And we spent a lot of time thinking about how to do this. And Eddie and Terry Thatcher and the team of people who have worked on this for a long time, I think, have really it's done something that not only needed to be done, but it was tricky. And it's everybody agrees the Bull Run needs to be protected and managed in the right way. But as norms have changed and our understanding of the environment has changed and the difficulty of contracting with the federal government has not changed, it's been a relatively difficult thing to pull off. And so the fact that you guys have stuck with this and despite having to deal with three commissioners is the way I would describe it. it's very, very good. So thank you, Gary. It's a great, great pleasure to see you this morning.
I didn't realize this was an ordinance, not a resolution, but I just wanted to also add my accolades both to the great work that Edward Campbell has done, but Gary Larson, as Commissioner Sten said, has persevered through three of us and kept his head up and a smile on his face the whole time, and we have a good product here in front of us. This is a very rational approach to joint management of the Bull Run watershed that makes sense, I think, for the federal government, sense for the Water Bureau, and for our publics as well. And I think it will serve and protect our resource for a long, long time to come. So thanks for all your leadership, both of you.
Thank you. Thank you, folks.
If I could, Mayor, I'd just like to recognize the employees that have worked on this with us, Dick Robbins and Terry Black from my office, and then Rick Acosta and Christine Arredondo from the Forest Service. They've definitely been the key movers and shakers in this. Thank you.
And Eddie, I'd also just like to, though she's not here, mention your predecessor, Rosemary Menard, who I think worked very closely on getting this ball rolling.
We are going to have public testimony, so we'll have an opportunity after that to.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have a sign-up sheet?
Yes, we have two people signed up, Raina Merritt and Cascade Anderson Geller.
Did you ask these folks in, or are we on time? Okay, thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes.
Hi, my name is Regna Merritt. I'm here representing Oregon Wild, formerly known as Oregon Natural Resources Council. We've worked for over 33 years to protect Oregon's wildlands, waters, and wildlife, and have worked closely with many of you in efforts to protect the Bull Run and our drinking water. First of all, I want to diverge for 1 minute to thank you for the council's support of legal efforts to fight the EPA's costly and unnecessary mandate to increase treatment of Bull Run water.